Welcome to the Games Gone podcast with me, Tom Ross, and thrilled that this week my guest is former Aston Villa and Wolves winger and England, of course, Tony Daly. Dales, how are we doing?
Good, thanks, Tom. How are you?
Absolutely average, pal.
That's good for you, isn't it? That's good.
Oh, for me, that's excellent. Anything above mediocrity for me is I'm happy days. I mean, it's the day after the Euro final, and I suppose you played for England. You will know what those lads were going through last night. Give us a little insight into what they were going through.
Look, initially, prior to that, with a nation behind them, full of confidence, playing really good football, peaking at the right time with the results we're getting, they would have gone in there on a high. You know, some would have been apprehensive coming into the game beforehand. It's a big occasion. Some would be perfectly fine about it, but as soon as that whistle goes, they'd be at it. But to lose the game the way they did, through penalties, you know, no matter how the performance was, would have been devastating. Mm. Again, in front of you know, the home nation, 30 plus million people watching the game as well. It's going to be a really, really tough thing for them to take that. Not taking anything away from them, because you know I've gone on record. You know, I'm proud as punch that what they've done is a massive achievement. But, you know, they haven't let anybody down. You know, they've gone above and beyond. The way they can conduct themselves on and off the field has been outstanding.
There seems to be a real togetherness about that squad.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, I was involved in the US squad in 1992, where it was us as in the England team versus the rest of the nation, and that includes the press as well. there was a fight against the press. There was that thing where you felt uncomfortable around the press. The nation already didn't give us and Graham Taylor a chance, and that channels into the players as well. Of course it does. It made it really, really difficult. But you know, you see a team that have embraced the press. The nation have taken to their hearts again. You can see the real players, the way they are, the way they conduct themselves, the relaxed nature of the way things are. And that's reflected with that togetherness you've seen and the performances on the pitch.
If you're picked for the England squad, if you're picked in the England team, you can't be too young, can you?
Never too young. If you're picked for your club, and you cross that white line, you're available to be picked. You're never too young. We're talking about England as well. I mean, we've talked about it off air. The likes of Rashford, you know, Sancho, they're young in age, but not in stature. They've played at the highest level. You know, they're playing week in, week out in two of the toughest leagues in the world on a regular basis, scoring goals, performing, you know, playing in European semi-finals and finals. You're never too young once you cross that line. Believe me, Tom, the football world, you know, when you're 17, 18, or even sometimes 16, you train with the first team, you're a man, you become a man. You know, you're in that environment, you live and breathe it. You know, if you don't become a man, you'll suffer, you'll soon die. You know, when I say die in terms of not being able to cope,
Footballing sense. In a footballing sense, you're talking. Did you ever miss a penalty?
No, I've took one only in the League Cup semi-final against Tranmere, which ended up being a winning goal because Bozzy saved the one. And let me tell you, in training, when you take penalties, I take them my left foot, my right foot, the Panenkas. It's so easy. Honestly, it's frightening. No pressure at all and everything else. That pressure there going up, being a sixth person, taking a penalty, it's a knockout football. And I'm talking at a semi-final level. Just imagine that. I'm telling you now, the goals suddenly become five-a-side goals and the keeper becomes a giant. That's how it looks, and I won't lie to you. And just imagine that, times that 100 times, playing in a Euro Championship Cup final, the nation behind you, you know, with 30 plus million, possibly more, obviously more people watching that. That's actual TV. Yeah. And that. It's amazing, amazing pressure.
Yeah, and I suppose really as well, that pressure can sometimes transmit, can't it, to the team, to the players, to the fans. It can pressure has a way of transmitting and not show. And, you know, I don't care who you are. If you're a human being, you're going to feel that, aren't you?
Of course. There's this thing about if you're a pro footballer, you should be able to score from 12 yards. It doesn't work that way. It's human nature. In your own life, where you feel the pressure, you're pressuring job, pressuring work, you get head fog. Football players are human beings, and pressure's no different in whatever environment you do. The better ones, in terms of that now, have the better mentality. The ones who can go on, your Ronaldo's, your Messi's, you know, in England, your Beckham's, your Rooney's, they're the ones who live off that, feed off that, and breathe off that. That's why they're classed as world-class players.
Yeah.
On a different level, because they can cope not just with the technical ability and the physical ability, but also the mental, their mental capacity to cope with these situations.
Am I right in thinking, before we get onto your career, am I right in thinking that very often at a training session, a manager will say, right, who fancies taking one? Because the player's got to want to take one, hasn't he?
And the thing is, for right or wrong, there's going to be, if he asks, 11 footballers, including goalkeeper, if you want to take a penalty, European Cup final, all 11 will say yes. Out of those, perhaps 8 would actually mean it and want to, and probably 3 would go, you know, I'm going to say yes because I think it's the right thing to do. The brave person is going to turn around and say no, and that person's brave not to say so, and perhaps wouldn't. But my point is, the majority of them will be confident and want to take a penalty. And in the end, you know, talk about people, these experienced players should be taking penalties. They're all experienced. They're the ones that we don't have an insight. Gareth Southgate sees those players week in, week out during that championship. They'd have been practicing penalties. They'd have been working on the mental side of penalties, trying to, you know, which you can't do is to try and get that feeling of being put under pressure. And those are the ones, those first 5 in that order that have been planned, we've been able to take those penalties. So I heard people saying about Saka taking that last penalty and being such a young person. No, you know, he would have won that contact penalty, and 2, you know, the England staff would have been quite confident as well that he was the right person to take that penalty at the right time. And unfortunately, you know, like everything else, we're human beings, yeah. We make mistakes, we don't hit target, the pressure becomes too much. That's human nature.
What's annoyed me more than him missing is the reaction to him and to Sancho and to Rashford in terms of racism online. You must have suffered racism yourself.
Yeah, I did, but it was more overt in terms of it was open.
You know, in the 80s, it was prevalent then, wasn't it?
Absolutely, and it was, you know, when you're getting monkey chants, I say you don't become hard to it, but you become used to it. You get monkey chants from, you know, a majority of the way fans, the hardcore side of the way fans, you know, getting that kind of abuse, become used to it. And I'm not saying it's right, because it's not and it's wrong. But when it comes to now, we're now, football's supposed to have moved on. So I'm going to an area where, when I was playing, where, person of colour was probably the minority in terms of playing sport at that level. Yeah. At that time. And now it's twisted around, and you won't go to a team where 50% or more are, you know, black, Asian, or whatever type of player. And for this day and age now, it shouldn't be happening, Tom.
No.
But fortunately, when I say this as well, you know, this is the minority. Social media, and they're the ones, unfortunately, with the loudest voices, and you know, and then you get people hanging on the coattail of that. They've had their 15 minutes of fame, they put it out there, and you know, and I think I'll keep saying it again, it needs to be social media needs to have some way of stopping these people, banning people, or where they're not hiding behind a keyboard, but they're named
cowards.
Absolutely.
Let's move on to Tony Daly, the young footballer. 233 league appearances, 31 goals, Wolves 21 games, 3 goals. This is league. When was it Because as a young lad, when did you suddenly think, this is going to be my career?
I was about 8 or 9 years old, kicking the ball around with my elder brothers on the football field. You know, playing football at that age, over in the school, I just knew I was going to be a footballer, Tom, and I won't lie to you, I did, and that's all I wanted to ever be. I had a permit out of football that time. But I think what happened for me was the hardening. You know, there's a 4-year gap between me and my next brother. I used to be playing football when I got to 10, running rings around them, and they weren't having that. So they were, you know, they were chopping me down and everything else and picking me up again. I would do the same thing again. And I knew then that I wanted to be a football player. And, you know, and the usual things of what do you want to be? I want to be a footballer. No, what do you want to be? That's great. But, you know, what do you really want to be? I want to be a footballer. That's all I ever said. Yeah. And my aim to be that.
When did you get... Did you play junior football, school football, and Sunday football? Was that your pathway?
It was a pathway. It was, as it said there. You know, I played obviously went to secondary school, played for a school team.
And then is that St George's?
George's Comprehensive, yeah. Yes, right. Yes, yeah. Then I played for my district through that year as well, but through school as well. I was playing like 2 years ahead of myself as well, from 11 playing against 14-year-olds at the time, and keep moving up. And that was a good path for me. And then obviously playing for your county at that time, you know, and then that was the route I got into football. And I was spotted by Blues at the time. You know, I went training with Blues down at Blues at a particular time, at Villa at the time, and even ventured over to Blackpool, for a spell as well, playing football before my path went the right way, Tom.
I thought you'd say that. So who was your big, who was your big inspiration?
Big inspiration, believe it or not. At the time, you know, we talk about the Laurie Cunninghams, Cyril Regis.
Wow.
All those particular players, you know, even though I was not a West Brom fan, but admired those players because they were black. I aspired to be like them. They were the minority playing in that league.
They were the pioneers.
Absolutely, absolutely. And you know, the older I got, when I got to 14, 15, there was a young player who lived in Aston, went to my rival school at Holt, called Mark Walters, and at the age of, everyone's talking about when I was 12 at the time, this 16-year-old player who was phenomenal, doing things at 16 when you see him playing, you know, for Aston Villa's first team as well, phenomenal. And I would actually go to youth team games or whatever to go and watch Mark Walters. So I wanted to emulate him and what he had done. I thought he was an absolutely extraordinary player at that particular time. So I watched his career path as well. That's something that I wanted to do as well. A local lad, you know, from Birmingham, you know, playing for the club that he supported. That was what I wanted to do.
That school of yours, St George's, and I know it very well because I've slept in the caretaker's house there on more than one occasion, let me tell you, because my mate's dad was the caretaker. But they bred some footballers, didn't they?
Gordon Cowans was there as well. Yeah. The storages,
yeah,
as well. I mean, there was a lot of young pros as well who'd come through that you probably would know, that the Garwood brothers as well, who went on to play for became pros at Leicester, Robert Lane as well. That was during my area. For the school, the size of it was, I think it was something like 500, 600 kids. Yeah. It was a tiny comprehensive.
Yeah.
Produced some absolutely wonderful football players.
Were you quick then? Were you always quick?
Yeah, I was, Tom. I was quite rapid then. And something I never really worked at as well. I used to play school football at the time. You know, I was, I remember actually junior level school, my primary school. You know, we'd play football and I'd probably score 6-7 goals
in through a game. Pace.
Yeah, through just running through, scoring goals at that particular time. And I remember when we used to play football, we'd pick sides just in the playground. You know, I was one of the last picks on simple reasons, because if I was on that team, then no one would get a kick of the ball at that particular time. It was quite strange. Well, I mean, you know, even then, you would talk, sorry, just going back to St. George's, you know, there were players, talking about talented players, there were probably two or three players in and around my age group who were told that stage were better than me, and for whatever reason, didn't follow their path. You know, there was some really, really good players. Mm. But yes, I was fairly quick at that time.
So why not athletics?
I would say.
Nobody's kicking you.
Yeah, good point. Yeah, athletics. St. George's wasn't really an athletic school. I remember I went to a trial for the district, ran, I think it was 100 metres, and won it. Didn't enjoy it, Tom. I won't like it. And then I realised that athletics wasn't my thing as well. And we got to the county level, and I won in a county level. I think it was about 15s, it was as well. My heart wasn't in it, and I ran that. In that, and I think there was about seven or eight athletes. I finished about sixth in it, and you know what? And I wasn't disappointed either, and I didn't give my heart to it as well, to give me time to concentrate on football and cricket. Tom, I loved cricket as well. That was my two loves, you know. So for me, it was more cricket, I think, where I was thinking, you know, which my dad would have been very pleased with at the time if I was going to follow.
Were you a bowler or batsman?
All rounder, Tom.
Oh.
Left arm seamer, right-handed number four batsman was my thing.
Wow. There's a talent I didn't believe or knew you had. So how did he end up at Aston Villa then? Obviously, who was the man there that persuaded you?
There's my school teacher at the time was Colin Rogers, who had a connection with Villa.
Yeah. I've met Colin Rogers.
Great guy then. And he was the one saying to me, I mean, Villa was going to be my thing anyhow, in terms of, I wanted to go to Villa as it was there. And I think it was, well, I hung on to about 15 before I actually signed schoolboy forms for Aston Villa. So I signed there with them. Conor was a big influence in my career. And also my Sunday League manager at the time was Neil Wilson. Ken Wilson, that's his son I played with. Ken Wilson. And he had a big influence both.
What Sunday team was it?
It was Selby United.
Oh, right, okay.
Also league at the time. You know, and we won lots of competition against some talented people who played in that team as well. And both those had a thing in my career in terms of, you know, putting the right path, giving the right platform to go and do what I did. So it's 15 when I signed school boy forms. I remember at 16 signing as a scholar, which was a massive thing for me as well, turning 16. But even then, I think it was a high in my career as well, because even at 16, there was a lot of talk about myself playing football at the time. And you know, you're in and around the youth, the older players, the reserves at the time, and the first team. 16, I was, you know, kind of compelled to go and play and train with those particular players. Mm. And it was great when you're 16, 17, training with the likes of Peter Reeve, Gary Shaw, you know, Gordon Cowan,
Tony Morley.
I think Tony Morley probably left that time, I think.
Mm. He was rapid though as well, wasn't he?
Listen, I'm good friends with Tony Morley now. He's an absolutely great guy. And some of the goals he scored there, I mean, what a wonderful, wonderful player. I mean, again.
Well, he went to West Brom on loan, went to Birmingham on loan, scored goals wherever he went, Tony. And he only lives around the corner from me. He's a top lad. So, but we talk about youngsters. I mean, for goodness sake, you were 17 and you broke into the Villa first team.
Absolutely, yes, it was. As I said, you know, and that no fear factor. I just played football because I love football. And, you know, when I had a chance to go and train with the first team, being drafted over from the youth team, go and train with the first team. And you're going out there and you're doing what you're doing. And it's quite, it's a tough score, because when you're skipping past, you know, the likes of Gibbo, Conor Gibson, and he's, you know, and the next time you're 6 feet in the air, spinning over, and he's picking you up nicely and cursing you, saying, do that again. And you're going to get more of it, you know, with a smile on his face, and taps you on the head kind of thing. It becomes a tough score. And that's how I learned football. But they were wonderful to me, because what it was, that you gave me introduction of, you know, what first team football is about and what I was going to expect in my career. But then, you know, in terms of that, channeling those things and being appreciated and felt part of that, you know, that environment and that group, I felt that way. And I remember at 17, travelling, it was to a friendly game. I think it was down in Bristol Rovers. I think it was going down there, and I was drafted into the first team squad. And I played in that game, and I did extremely well in that particular game under Graham Turner. And from then, he drafted me into the following week. I went down, which I thought was just to be get some first experience against Southampton. And it wasn't until the Friday afternoon, he told me, are you ready for this? You'll be playing tomorrow type of thing. So I had no warning of that. Yeah. So, you know, at that particular time, the young lad just thought he was just going down to help Jim Paul, the kit man, pick up kit, which is a normal thing to do. Being propelled to playing your first team, making your first team debut at 17. So that was, again, that was an awesome feeling. And as a Villa fan, Tom, you know, it was a great thing for me as well, you know, to be able to do that, to play with the heroes that you've watched from the stands as well, to go that, because, you know, I remember, you know, watching the likes of, you know, assisted all those particular players, the year we won the league that particular time. So it was fantastic watching. Well, couldn't see much of it in the whole team, but going down there with my brother to watch those games was a fantastic feeling. And a year later, you know, you're playing a first team game with those heroes of yours.
Who was in the team? Do you remember the team when you made your debut? Who was in it?
Gordon Cowans was there. Well, Tom, I'd have to think about that. I can't remember who the.
He weren't bad, Cowans, was he? To be fair.
He weren't bad. You know, Gordon Cowans for me was one
tremendous.
He was, again, a player who really, really helped my career magnificently by playing with him. You just knew for him now, you made that run and it would be put on a sixpence for you with his left foot, right foot. The amount of, you know, if you go back and look at my goals as well, the amount of goals he's created for me in terms of, you know, that spraying those balls out wide and putting those balls through is tremendous. He was, as I said, Tom, some player. I can't describe how good he was.
He was great to watch, so what to play with, I would imagine. But obviously, Graham went, Big Ron came in, of course, and you had a good spell under Big Ron, won the League Cup and stuff. But that team that you were in at that time, and you mentioned it just the game at Tranmere. I mean, what an atmosphere that was.
One of the best games for an atmosphere that I can truly say I can ever remember. It was honestly, truly the roar from the fans and everything else from that whole tent as well. And the whole stadium was unbelievable. It was, it was 3-1 that game as well. Going in, we needed two goals to get back in this as well, and we left it till the death to do that. But to involve that as well, and going into the penalties as well, it was a film made. Yeah. You know, that was a perfect film in terms of coming back. But during that year as well, I think our name was on the cup. I think as well, we go back to the cup final before that against Sunderland. And Sunderland battered us, Tom. We beat them 4-0. That was the biggest 4-0 winning battering that I've ever had. And Bozzy kept us in that first half, kept us in the game like you don't believe. The best performance from a goalkeeper I had ever seen. Point blank save, tipping around the post. He had 1-on-1 saving. He was absolutely awesome. And we hit him on the break, I think, you know, two or three times now, I think, in the first half as well. Went on to win that game quite comfortably in the end, but it wasn't as comfortable as that results.
A big influence in that team, of course, and winning that cup was Dalian, of course. Dalian Atkinson, rest his soul. I mean, how good was he?
Listen, Dalian had the attributes to be one of the top players, you know, you could ever see. But with trouble with Dalian at the time, you just did not see enough of it. And that was, you know, just down to him on his day. And there were plenty of days off it as well.
World beater.
yes, honestly, left foot, right foot, strikes, heading ability. You couldn't get him in the air.
And quick.
Rapid, absolutely rapid. You know, it was a competition. I remember playing against Daniel Wins at Ipswich in the cup game, and he was playing on the I think it was right wing, I was playing on the left, and of course we'd heard about each other, and I think it was thinking, okay, who's going to be the quickest? So I pick the ball up, go past the fullback, and he's running back, you know, tackling me, but you know, going back and giving himself. He did the same, and I first passed my fullback to tackle him. So that was our first introduction of each other before, and you know, obviously I passed across the Villa, where we become great, great friends. And so, you know, what a fantastic, funny guy he was. Honestly.
There's you, double rapid, fit as anything, and the fans' favourite, Paul McGrath, didn't even bother training.
As well, you know, funny stories with Paul. It was quite funny because if we play a game, say we had a game Saturday and a game Wednesday, you know, we'd play Saturday, of course, we'd man of the match, be outstanding. And he'd come on a Sunday for a cool down, and he'd tell Jim Walker, "Jim, my knees are shot. Forget about me. Wednesday, no chance. You know, forget about. I've got no chance." And Jim Walker, obviously knowing Paul McGrath, says, "Look, just come on the bike. Just do bits and pieces. We'll leave it as late as possible. Get to Monday. He's hobbling around. You know, he can hardly walk and everything else. And he's just doing a bit on the bike and everything else. Tuesday, same thing. Tom, he's got. I've got no chance of playing everything." And then Jim will go, "Jim, on a Wednesday, come on, we'll have a little test just before the game, see how you are." He's already been penciled into playing here. Yeah? You know, he'll be hobbling around, but yeah, I'll try and get through it. Wednesday evening, man the match, Paul McGrath. What an outstanding, honestly, what an outstanding.
The Villa fans call him God, and you can understand why.
Honestly, he was a Rolls Royce. He really, truly was.
And next to him, you've got Victor Meldrew, in football terms, Sean Teal. He would frighten any striker, he would.
Great guy, yes. You know what you're getting from Teal as well. And I think that they both complemented each other really well.
In terms of,
well, you know, we talk about Paul from that, because obviously having a massive career, and he played a lot of his time midfield for Man United, was so comfortable on the ball. And Teal, he was, admit it, head it, kick it, did what his strengths were. Fantastic. And he wanted to defend, you know, he'd put his head on the end of anything as well, you know, and take man and ball out as well. So they both complemented each other really, really well.
Yeah, Teeley was the original head it and kick it, man. No missing. No, or head it and kick, not only the ball.
Whatever's in front of him as well at that particular time. That's correct, yes.
Nobody gave you a chance in that League Cup final against Man United, but what a day that was for you all.
It was a fantastic day. And I think prior to that, our league form one was shocking. I think we'd lost, you know, the last two league games before that. The week before, I think we got beat by Oldham at home or something stupid as well. And, you know, big Ron's tactic was that, you know, we thought we were going to get an absolute, you know, tonking for that and everything. He says, look, we can go one way here as now. We've got to get together as a team now. Our biggest game is going to be that Sunday against Man United. Nobody gives us a chance. It was siege mentality. You just go out. There's no pressure on us at all. We just got to go out there and perform. And I think the way that it was so relaxed up to that week as well. The training was relaxed. You know, there's no pressure put on us at all from the manager. Big Ron took that as well. Bear in mind that Man United were going for the treble that time. You know, we were complete firm favourites for that. And after this, our form was absolutely shocking leading up to that game as well. But we went in there with a quite quiet confidence. You know, we were allowed to bring our partners with us and our kids down to training. You know, we'd spend a couple of nights with them leading up to that. And then we went off to our own hotel to prepare for the game. So that was quite relaxing as well. But everything was so relaxed in terms of that. Tom, it's really good.
Quite York. I mean, I remember the game. I think Yorkie scored, didn't he?
Didn't get in the squad that time.
No, he don't. That's right. He was following that. He was 96, wasn't he? 96. He scored 96. Who scored? Was it Kevin Richardson? Was your skipper, wasn't he?
Kevin Richardson. Yes, it was I think it was Damien scored and Dean Saunders scored.
Dean Saunders.
Yeah, awesome team. I think the young like Graham Fenton, who was drafting the team, big one tactically, was fantastic in terms of that. You know, Graham Fenton came from nowhere and put him in that kind of midfield stroke number 10 role, which he was really effective. And Man United could really cope with the system that we played. You know, played Dean out wide right, really, myself out wide left, and played Dean Saunders down the middle. And it was completely different to what they were expecting. And on that day, we performed unbelievably well.
I suppose, we're just talking there, but you think of the black players that have had a massive influence on Aston Villa: Ian Taylor, Dwight York, Paul McGrath, yourself, Dalian Atkinson. I mean, they've been phenomenal, haven't they? You know, in terms of an impact on a football club.
Yeah, absolutely, as I said there as well. I mean, it's good as well because I think it reflects where Aston is. Aston is a multicultural,
very diverse area. That's where I'm from, Summer Lane.
Absolutely, and reflecting that as well, is the fans with that as well. Even when I started well in the 80s, as well, playing in the 80s, you'd still see Asian and black faces in the crowd. When I went away games, I never saw that, you know, and it affected the way Aston Villa were and everything else. And it's great that the players you've just named there as well, can have a big influence on the fans, on, making it the game available to all, even throughout the football side of Aston Villa. It's been fantastic. That's been the case.
How big a wrench was it to leave, and when did you leave?
I left after the cup final. Prior to that, me and Big One didn't see eye to eye of certain things at that particular time. And don't get me wrong, I'll still speak to him. And like anything else, we saw our differences. He saw my differences in terms of the way I played and how I wanted to play as well. I remember putting a transfer request that season as well, and Udinese had put a bid in for me. The season leading up to, prior to that, when we got into the UEFA Cup, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
At the time, and I was playing some decent football at the time, and the club wouldn't let me leave. With agreed terms and everything else to go over to Udinese, playing football in Italy, but I think it was £2 million at that particular time, and obviously Big One didn't want me to go until we were out of the cup, the European competition, and I think we went an extra round and we expected to be in that competition. So what happened when that particular happened at the time, Udinese pulled out the deal. At the time I was gutted with that as well. That was the case, but again, the light of it was that I wouldn't have a League Cup winner's medal at that time, so I wouldn't have been playing.
Yeah.
Post that as well, I'd left at the end of the season. I sat down with one, and he says, "Look, you know, my contract was coming to an end at that time." He says, "Look, it's up to you what you want to do. You know, we're quite happy for you to be able to move on. I've got another year left prior to that as well. There's no qualms in where we are." But he said that Graham Taylor's made an interest at the time, and Wolves have come in. At that particular time, Tom, I won't lie to you, I wanted to be playing in the Premier League.
Yeah.
Wolves were in the Championships at that particular time. And obviously, having worked with Graham Taylor and everything else, and what he'd done, I'd respect as well, I'd respect to Wolves and everything else. I went there to talk to see, you know, what were their plans. I wasn't playing football, the Premier League football. I'd met Graham Taylor at his home, and after about 4 hours him talking, he persuaded me to go to the club, because we wanted to take that club at a particular time. I still think, given the time as well, that he would have done that. The players he wanted to go into sign, it was a no-brainer for me. I'd been at Villa for 10 years, and even though it was a wrench to leave, my time had come there. I needed a fresh challenge. I needed something different. I wanted to go and do something with my career. You know, really give me opportunity with the fantastic Suns, to play for the club of sports as a kid. Being adored, being the local lad, being adored by the Villa fans as well, and also given opportunity to play for my country as well. Under the Villa badge as well. If someone asked me, you know, what do you want out of your career, you could have just stopped it, draw a line of it under there, and retired. Me done. That's fantastic. So I needed a fresh challenge, where I was, and Wolves were that at that particular time.
Just before we get to Wolves, playing for England, that first call-up, I mean, you're a proud Englishman, that first call-up, I mean, how did you explain to us how the feeling is?
It's amazing. It was my first call-up was actually, I think it was a friendly against the Republic of Ireland, and that was under Bobby Robson. 1990, just before the World Cup, I was in the squad at that particular time, and getting that call in terms of wasn't a call straight to me. Obviously, it was the manager at the time just telling me that you're in the squad. Honestly, I cannot describe the feeling of being called up for to represent your country, and still is, and I'd say to any player now as well, it is the pinnacle of your career, right? To be able to do that, to be a chance to represent your country. And, you know, for me, it's an absolutely amazing.
Who was in the England team with you?
At that particular time as well, would have been the likes. Obviously, David Platt was there. Gordon Cowan was in there as well. There was Gary Lineker, who was coming to the end of his career. Paul Gascoigne. Des Walker.
Wow.
Yeah, Nigel Clough.
You just mentioned Paul Gascoigne. Wow.
Ian Wright, sorry, as well, there as well. Yes, there was there. John Barnes as well. All those players. I mean, it was an amazing, amazing time.
You mentioned there Paul Gascoigne, arguably one of the greatest English players of all time. I mean, what was he like to play with? Mad as a hatter, but what was he like to play with?
Absolute pleasure. And it was a difference now of actually playing against him and actually playing with him to see what a great player he was. His ability on the ball was second to none in terms of his, you know, the way he could carry the ball, hold defenders off. And we talk. I'm not referring to Jack Grealish as Paul Gascoigne, but I can see why people actually talk about those two
in the same breath.
Yeah, in the same breath, in terms of that the ability on the ball to carry the ball, you know, even under pressure. And he was honestly some player. You know, you find yourself in training sessions and you're actually on his side and you're actually watching him and you know, you're like a spectator on the ball. You have to slap yourself out of it. Come on, get yourself back involved. Yeah, so yeah, he was some player. He really was.
Did you? I mean, you've played against them, but did you sit in that England dressing room and look around you at Ian Wright and Gascoigne and think, "Wow, what am I doing here?"
It's nervous as well in terms of that now, because you've got to have faith in your own ability. I won't lie to you, Tom. It's like, you know, oh my God, you're playing with the elite of the nation at that particular time. And you just mentioned other players, yes. But when you get in that environment and they're so welcoming, if that makes sense, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, you're a newbie and everything else. And if you feel part of that squad and part of it as well, they make you feel so welcome that you feel comfortable to be there. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
The time. So, yes, that's initial feeling. But most generally, once that initial, you know, that initial first day as such, you get out of the way, it's perfectly fine.
I think you talked about Graham Taylor taking you to Wolves, and I suppose that's when your problem started injury wise, wasn't it?
It was. I'd picked up a crucial injury just end of my time at Villa. I was out for 6 months with that and came back with that. And that same following season, I came back from an injury, and that following season, I played a few games and I'd signed for Wolves first that first season. And let me tell you something now, Steve, I went along with the good friend of mine, Steve Froggatt, who joined at the same time as me. We, in that pre-season, you know, were absolutely flying. I mean, the squad we had, like Jeff Thomas, John DeWolf, those particular players, on paper, would be the equivalent of that, you know, the time I think Newcastle went up and actually walked the league, so kept the, you know, that first team. It was a fantastic team. And myself and Froggy were in during that pre-season of flying. I trained really hard during that pre-season as well. In terms of that, I'd probably say, and I won't say it, Tom, that I felt as fit and as strong, and as, and in terms of my football ability, in terms of me feeling the best part of my career. And then during that pre-season, I picked up a cruciate injury in Sweden at that time. It was quite innocuous. It was in a training session. Right at the end of training sessions, we do a pattern of play where we don't go against opposition. We just pretend you're playing against opposition. Person crosses in the box. I've gone in, just attacked the ball on the left foot, and then my knee buckled in underneath me. And went down in absolute heap agony. I got back up and everything else. And there's a lot of swelling on my knee. But 24 hours later, swelling had gone. It got meaning. And then literally, I go, you know, I think I didn't train next day. The following day, trained. No problem. That felt, you know, and everything else, that was really weird. And during another training session, it happened exactly the same, but this time the swelling stayed. My knee had just absolutely blown up. And this was about, I think, about two weeks before the season had started. So seen the surgeon, he said, look, you've partially ruptured your cruciate. We don't see it as a major problem because I've done a cruciate previous. We think that, you know, by building this, you can have an operation, you're going to be out for 9 months. Or you can build it up and get, you know, the muscles around that knee particularly strong, and you know you could be back in 3 months. It turns out now, we had a chat and everything else, and thought that was the option, because really I've never. He said, look, you've had this a while and you've coped with it quite well, so that the option I chose was to build the muscle up around that knee. I talked to specialists as well and the physiotherapist at the time, and you know, again, it worked out that particular heart particularly well during that, and. Wounds came training. I trained for 2 weeks prior, twisting and turning, felt absolutely fantastic. I remember making my debut against Millwall with about, I think about 20 minutes to go. I think we were, believe it or not, 2-0 up. How's this going to do? I'm 2-0 up. You know, I had a warm, and to quite honestly, the Wolves fans were unbelievable. The reception I got, you know, going up, building the warm, and I was on the pitch. I had a fantastic that, and then. Within 2 minutes, you know, the fullback had cut inside me, and I went to turn to run.
Gone.
Helped me, but I hobbled around for the next 2 minutes and knew it wasn't right. And in that particular time, the 5 minutes I was actually on the field, the score became from 2-0 to 2-2. From time at that particular time, so and in the end, had to be substituted. I think after about 7 minutes with that as well, and then. You know, that was the most devastating times of my career because following that, I realised that I would have to have the operation, and that following month I was going to be out for, I think it took me about 7 to 8 months. I'd missed the whole season, come back, I think, just a month or so into the next season. Again, got through that injury, no problem at all. We got to pre-season at that particular time. Again, flying. And I'd gone with a tackle. I think it was Simon Osborne at the time. And it wasn't. I'd just gone to strike a ball with my right foot. And Simon Osborne has gone to block a shot like he normally do. So that they wouldn't. I didn't even catch his foot. It was literally the ball in between me and that. And blocked the shot. I heard a popping noise. And that was the worst thing ever. Because I'd booked my patella tendon on that same knee as well. And that this was a more serious injury, that really was, you know, looking back a bit at that time as well, because the amount of injuries I had on that, I was out for something like 14 months, I think, at the time of that getting back. I mean, I want to go on record at that particular time, Tom, that, you know, I did have a choice to whether to retire or try and continue at that particular time with that. And, you know, I chose the latter. That was, I wanted to continue, you know, I wanted to actually try and fulfill my career and get back. So it took me a while to get back. I was obviously never, ever the same person again in terms of that. And, you know, when your knees are on. You know, I had a year on and off with Wolves as well, playing on a few more first team games. And then my contract had finished, and I went off for one season as well.
For the Warsaw, but was your career really over then? Yeah, as Tony Daly, the man we knew.
Yeah, absolutely. I knew my career was over the day I did my last injury. You know, prior to that, that really was. And you know, I tried my hardest to fight back, fought back to try and get it right. Or even when I went to, it was a tough old slog. Because I went and played at initially at Watford on a pay-by-play basis. You know, I didn't play-by-play. I didn't really, you know, my knee was really, really sore that time. And you know, I was on the ground table. Well, the club were tremendous to me there as well, in terms of that. So they knew my situation, my knee. I was at ability, even though I was there literally on trial as such. I didn't have to train every day. I could nurse my knee through, stuff like that. And, you know, I got through a season there with Watford at that particular time as well. And I left there. That was a year Watford went up into the Premier League as well. To be part, you know, to play a part in that as well was great for me as well, doing that. And I came for Warsaw knowing full well I had a short-term contract with Warsaw. It was initially a 3 month, it ended up 6 month contract. I was there for 3 months again, and knew straight away that wasn't the case. And you know, having speak to that then, and I would terminate my contract at 3 months and decided I needed to retire from
league football.
Football, that's right. Yes.
Didn't you go to Forest Green?
Yes, I went to Forest Green. I had probably 4 great years there. You know, two of which I know 18 months of that, 2 years that was actually playing, and then 2 years as fitness coach, because at a particular time when I went to Forest Green, I was actually doing support science degree at Coventry University full time at that particular time as well. I was playing, obviously they were part-time, only playing training Tuesday, Thursdays, enabled me to actually be able to fulfil that.
And was it at that time that you got involved helping out at Villa Academy as well, didn't you?
That's right, yes. At the time, it was a bit on as well. I was coaching on a Sunday the under 10s youngsters, and I would go in and twice a week as well after training, stroke early evening with the under 15s. So I was going up into scholars, like to Gabby Bungalow, and doing some conditioning work and speed work with those particular players as well. So I was doing that as well. That was a lovely experience as well. I really enjoyed.
The best goal you ever scored? There's a lot of talk about Daly's dazzler at Everton.
Yeah, that was probably one that most people think was my best goal. And I really enjoyed that as well. But the truth is, that ball should have been headed. And you know, my heading capabilities, that was never going to be the
I don't think in all the time I've covered your games, I haven't seen you head it.
Well, at least I scored 2 goals for Villa header, so don't start.
My favourite, you probably won't remember it, was an FA Cup goal at West Brom.
That was one of my favourites as well, because that particular game as well was actually a really joy, especially second half. I had a fantastic game in that as well. That helped me probably as well in terms of being involved with the England squad as well. For me, I think that goal as well, I think my actual all-time favourite was once against Luton Town. We picked the ball up on left-hand side, left-hand wing, just before the halfway line, and run literally down the wing, past a couple of players, and cut inside towards the goals, and managed to dink it past the goalkeeper from the game. That was probably my actual favourite goal. You know, for all the goals you're talking about as well, Tom, you know, there was some special goals in there, but for me, I wish being able to score a few more tap-ins and increase that, you know, that goal-scoring regime.
We're always worldies. By the way, who was your manager at Forest Green?
Later on was Nigel Spinks.
Spinky was there, wasn't he? I was wondering, because I remember Spinky going there.
Spinksy, because I actually brought Spinksy down. He was there as a goalkeeper first of all, and then the previous manager before, can't remember his name. we've got now got the second, and Springsteen with David Norton took over.
Ah, with Nucky Bear there, was he? Yeah. David Norton, there's a name. But I suppose really for you then, was that when the sports science, you began to think, this is a new career for me?
I think it really started, believe it or not, when I was a couple of places under Jim Walker. I mean, I would always remember when I picked my cruise ship the year prior to me leaving Villa. And I had this fascination. I was, Tom, one of those stupid players, and people really don't believe this. I actually loved pre-season. In fact, I would train to be as fit as I can for pre-season.
That's the ready for pre-season?
Yeah.
Are you mad?
2 weeks off, I'd be in the gym, I'd be running on treadmills, I'd be doing everything, you know, trying to get big times. I'd have to go do, you know, 3 kilometres in. Ridiculous. I loved it. And then the pre-season came. I loved the running. Absolutely loved it. In terms of now, and that was something I really, really, really enjoyed. And for me, that was a big thing for me. And it got to when I got injured as well. I wanted to know more about the body. Say I had a hamstring strain and everything else. It was just thing, you know, Jim say it needs icing, or it's this, okay, what's the technical term for that hamstring, you know, the bicep femoris, whatever, I mean, what is it, and why do I have to ice it, why can't I use heat, why can't I do this, okay, if I'm doing this bike ride, what's it achieving, what part, what,
yeah,
why am I doing this for? And I used to, honestly, Jim Walker used to go, can you just get out of here now, leave me alone.
It was, I know you were, I think, maybe I'm wrong, I know you went to Wolves. Did you go to Sheffield United as well?
Sheffield United, yes, fitness coach was there. Fitness. I was United prior to that for 3 years. So whilst I was doing, when I finished my sports science degree, it was, and then Kelly, Dave Kelly, who was at Sheffield United, was going, which is, what are you doing? What are you doing yourself? And he goes, well, just finished my sports science degree. I'm looking, you know, I'm gonna be a fitness coach. I mean, that was my thing I wanted to do. And he goes, look, speak to Neil Warnock. He gave me his number. Give him a ring because I think there's a job going there and everything else. And just said, so I spoke to Neil Warnock. I phoned him up. I could be out of the blue. And he goes, well, I've just offered the job to somebody. And I says, well, you know, being push yourself myself. Let me come down and prove my worth. You know, be an opportunity for you as well.
Yeah.
Myself, so been explaining, knowing the game thing. So, okay, then. So he phoned me back an hour later and go, can you get down tomorrow? I have to go down to Lawston near Cornwall, and you. I'm going to put a training session on for you. If you come down, give me the address. It was a college, and it was I think about 8 local school kids. Go on, put a training session on for these, like at the
wow.
Building. Else. So I just thought I was going down for an interview. I wouldn't see that, so I put it on, and then you know, I had a couple of hours conversation with him and everything else. And when I got back in the evening, he called to say that you've got the job.
Wow.
So that was good as well, and that was a great experience for me as well, because what it taught me was, you know, when you go to university and you become a sports scientist, and there's some very good sports scientists in the game, what you find, can you transfer that to a football environment, which is extremely unique?
Is that an advantage you haven't been a player then?
It gives you a way in, because what happens is, you know, sports science are the whipping boys in terms of, I ain't doing that, it's just crap, worry, what are you for, blah, blah, yeah. Blah. Being able, having played the game, you've already got that respect.
Correct.
You can easily last if you rubbish at your job, that goes out the window. You only need one session, and if you don't produce, so you can lose that, that's out. But one it gives you that instant, okay, let's have a listen. Then, okay, you play, you've had a half decent career, let's see what you can do on this side. So you've got that respect straight away. So for me, it was an advantage in the buy-in to every, you know, going to come to Wolves, the same thing as well. It gives that little bit of buy-in, that little bit of respect, and that is an advantage. And again, that was the case when I went to Chef Wednesday. But I think as well, Tom, what you find with players is that in sports scientists, okay, a player who's done the speed tests and is the quickest doing the speed test, done the agility test, quick enough, or he's the strongest person. And when he goes on the football field or he's training and he's not doing that particular thing. And most people would tear their hair out, sports saying, well, he should be doing this because he can run that. But when you've played the game and you know the mentality of the game, it's okay. You have that empathy with them to understand, okay, sit down with them. What other issues have you got there? You know, I'm not about, is he carrying an injury? Is he protecting himself? Has he had an argument with Mrs. the night before or whatever? You know, has he got some other worries or whatever? But it's always a reason for finding that.
I find it difficult that you could fall out with anybody. Did you fall out with Warnock in the end?
No. What happened? Neil Warnock left. I think what happened was Brian Robson came after Neil Warnock. Neil Warnock, when we came out the Premier
League. Brian Robson came in.
I was there and he was perfectly fine. The only thing was that, like anything else, I was there at the time and I think the club wanted to keep me as there, but he wants his own money. So I was there for about, initially during the pre-season, did the pre-season, and then, you know, with about a couple of 2 weeks ago, he says he's going to bring his own fitness coach in. And he spoke to me, he says, got nothing against myself and everything else in terms of that now. There's somebody I've worked with previously, and this is going to be the case. And that was it. I says, that's no problem. And, we got on, we spoke perfectly well. And I think in the press, I don't know where it comes to the fact that we had this massive fallout and about this. That was never, ever the case at all, you know, as he said. So there's no fallout there.
You don't fall out with people anyway, to be fair. Although there's a few fullbacks who've not been too happy with it, I think, at times. Wasn't there a TV documentary about you?
Yes, of course.
Called
yes.
Respect?
Yes. Which was great. I think they did a hell of a lot of footballers, athletes as well as myself. I think I was the only footballer as well, and that was one of the highest viewing ones I actually did as well. So again, that was you at that time was unique. It was something before, and I think it was filmed on ITV at that particular time. And one thing, wasn't my comfort zone to put on at the time, what I found was that I was very, very quite honest in person. Off the field. Didn't really like the limelight, family man it was as well. To be actually putting this, I wasn't really comfortable with it. But once it's done, because the producer at the time who did it was really good, because he was just be yourself, be your natural self, and I was. At the time, I was probably known for my haircuts and...
Not many.
And it wasn't me being an expert. It was something, it was natural to me. That was my way of expressing myself, off the field. It wasn't something, how can I shock somebody today? Or, how am I going to get attention? It wasn't. That was me. You see me with the media and stuff. Yes. You're surprised about I come in something bland like a t-shirt and a pair of jeans. You go, what are you wearing today? Kind of thing.
We slaughter you, to be fair.
That's the way it was, and during that as well, I became quite comfortable because I was talking about and speaking about not only about football but myself off the field as well, and giving opportunity. Yeah. How the real me.
Of course. So tell us about. The favourite, your favourite player of all time and your favourite player that you played with.
Favourite player of all time would have to be a very, very close up between Pele and Maradona, I would say.
Not bad, were they?
I think Pele, the way, obviously, he scored so many goals and everything as well, but you look back at his archive and some of the
frightening.
I'm talking, it's ridiculous how his career, he expands his career for so long, scored so many goals, is beyond me for that reason alone. Yes, he was a great player, but honestly, some of the things he went through was horrendous, the tackles he had. And then you look at the likes of Maradona, what he did with that for an absolute long. People say you got to be 2 footed in this game, tell Maradona. He was exceptional.
I've not forgiven him for the hand of God.
Oh no, without everything else, without that, but you've got to respect him as a footballer as well. I mean, absolutely, I'm in agreeing with that as well.
What about the other goal he got in that game?
That was second goal. I mean, he does not want any greater than that. He said, to be honest with you as well.
What about your favourite you played with?
So yeah, favourite played with. Probably Paul Gascoigne. I call that far playing. I mean, I'm at international level, I would say Paul Gascoigne as well. It was a pleasure to be able to train and play with him for the reasons stated before. He was magical. He really, really was. The ability he had with that football was frightening.
What defender gave you the toughest time?
Yeah, there was a couple. There was toughest time. Okay, physically the toughest time, I would say, there was Mark Dennis and Julian Dix.
I wonder who they played for.
And Stuart Pearce, but yeah, exactly. But Stuart, what I liked about Stuart Pearce, right? He was tough tackling, right? I mean, Julian Dix, Dark Arts, and Mark Dennis, they were off the ball, you know, everything else. And they would actually go to, we'll try and break your legs. Yeah. Where Stuart Pearce, 50-50, he'd go for it. He'd, you know, there's two things you've got to see. Either you got past him or you were crunched. There was no with that as well. So you know what you're getting with him. But probably the hardest two opponents I probably played against was Dennis Irwin and Earl Barrett.
Earl Barrett, what a good footballer he was.
I'm so happy when he came to Villa at that particular time, because the team that I played against him never had a sniff. Honestly, hated playing against him. Hated it. Yeah, honestly.
Do you have a favourite manager? I mean, Graham Taylor loved you. He took you everywhere, didn't he?
Graham Taylor did that day. Because for me, Graham Taylor, he knew how to defend myself as well. I'm talking about myself personally, but I think Mark Taylor as well. He knew how the right time to put the arm on his shoulders and the right time to give you an absolute quality.
Yeah.
You know, I can remember, it's been on record, my first. When Graham Taylor first came there, I think I was 18 at the time, and obviously, you know, trying to fulfill my career at Villa, great things talked about me as well. And he was in one-to-one meetings with all the players, and he was talking to individuals. And for 3 days, he'd walk past me in the corridor and not even look at me, took gravitation and everything else. Never had a meeting with him, never literally spoke to him. I spoke to his assistant manager, never spoke to him. I'm thinking, what the hell, kind of thing, you know?
Oh.
I remember during the pre-season, I think on the fourth day, right, and Graham Taylor's renowned for his long after training sessions, you know, doing the set pieces and talking about football, literally about half an hour of football. And now he's out in the blazing sun and he's talking about tactics and football and everything else. And of course, like anyone else, your mind starts to wonder and you think about what's going to have for tea and everything else, what the kids are doing and stuff like that. You know, it's 4:30 in the afternoon, I should be home by now. And all I remember is someone go, "You, ask for you," like that. And then all of a sudden you can see all the players turn around because I'm just near the back, staring at me, and I'm still looking down. I've looked up and he's gone like, "Ah, he's always talking to me here," kind of thing. And he said, "As for you, you've been here a week now, and everyone's told me about this player. I haven't seen a thing."
Oh.
He says, "Listen, you start better booking your ideas up, or I'm sorry, you said you'd be down the road. I'm sorry, that's Blues, by the way." You'd be down the road. And that was my introduction to Graham Taylor. And after that, and that was a good thing as well, Tom, because, you know, what Tom Villa as a youngster, when you're talking about 15 years of age, was a rise. Oh, what a good player you are. Oh, yeah. You're going to get in the youth team. Oh, you're going to the first team. Oh, look at you. You're playing for England, the youth team. Oh, now you're in the first team at Villa at 17 and a half. And it was there, rise. I never had no knockbacks at all. Nothing at all in terms of that. And this one hit me like a ton of bricks. But you know what? It's the best thing that ever happened, because, hang on, just get out of his comfort zone now. I've got to prove myself to somebody for the first time in a long, long time, probably my first time in my career. I need to convince a manager that I am the player that everyone was talking about. But ever since that, you know, we got on like a house on fire, meaning that when I had a shocking first half in a game, and I'm thinking, I'm going to get it here. Not mind about it. And Kane, every player bar me, and then we're just about to go out, and he goes, "Look, he's our match winner. If you don't get the ball to him, I'm taking you off. You need to get the ball to him. He's going to cause magic." And I went out there second half feeling like $1 million. Unbelievable. The way he did. He knew the right time to do it. And then, you know, I'd be bored the first half and I'm jack the lads, you know, this is great, this. I'm strutting in thinking, oh yeah, great, yeah. And then you'd came me for not trapping the back post, you know, the last minute of the game or something, and you've gone sliding, it's gone in. And he goes, if I see that again, I'm dragging you off, like that kind of thing. And I'm thinking, wow, again, on your toes, you didn't know what you're going to get from him, and that's brilliant. And you never do that.
Gary Thompson had similar issues with him, but a lot different. But why are you not still in the game?
Yeah, to be honest with you, I went to Wolves and I was there head of sports science in Scotland for 10 years and had a fantastic time. And in 2017, obviously, Nuno came in and brought his own staff in there as well. And following that, I had three or four offers to go to different clubs, whether it was the distance wasn't right, the job wasn't right, or the pay packet wasn't right, it never materialised. But in the end, I decided to set up with Dave Barnett, originally PLP company that supplies a four-step program to footballers in terms of fitness, nutrition, health, one-to-one training. And also as well, I was really big into my fitness, as you know, at the time.
Yeah.
As well. And I also set up another company at the time called Seven Daily, where we supply one-to-one training and nutrition to not only elite athletes, but to the general public. Yeah. And from that, something I really enjoyed working myself and, being your destiny's in your own hands, and something that's really appealed to me and something where I love doing and have carried on since.
I suppose, finally, any regrets?
Regrets? Yes. The regrets I've had, I wish at Villa, perhaps not, to be quite honest with you, in terms of that fantastic time. The only regret I had was the fact that I wish Wolves had seen they would have had the best part of my career from 26 to 30. That might be. And unfortunately, through injury, that wasn't the case. My regrets was that the Wolves fans didn't see the real Tony Daly.
Mm. Dales, it's been absolutely fascinating. I've loved it. Thanks for being a guest on the podcast, mate. Thank you. Don't forget, folks, we'd love a review from you. Like it, don't like it. Be honest with us, tell us the truth, because that's the only way we'll improve things. Thanks for being with us, Dales. Whatever you do, mate, take care.
Thank you.